Oh, please. Oh, please. Okay, so we'll give a talk, and I'll try to give a talk. I have a little irritation in my lungs, I guess, and so we'll see how it goes. Can you hear me okay in the back? People here? 2 weeks ago when I was here, there was some concern about people not hearing me well enough. I remember, Bapesha was quite concerned many years ago about that. But I'm speaking louder now. You can hear me okay? So, but please, anytime anyone feels like I'm not speaking loud enough, please interrupt or raise your hands, wave, do something or move forward, like just face in the front. And I'll try to remember to speak loud enough. And today, with my voice being as it is, maybe it'll be a little bit harder than usual. So I wanted to talk this evening about something that's could be called the heart of Buddhist practice, or the radical heart of Buddhist practice. All of Buddhist practice, a lot of Buddhist practice, can be understood as preparations for being able to do this particular practice. And if one really understands what I'm going to say, well, that's all. All you need to understand in terms of practice. There are a lot of ideals in Buddhism. There's a lot of ideals in spiritual practice of all kinds. A lot of ideals in human life. And people try to live up to ideals, emulate ideals. They try to attain ideals. Sometimes they measure themselves against ideals, and we have many relationships to ideals. And certainly Buddhism has its share. But the heart of Buddhism is not an ideal, but is actually our actual experience. And so the focus is not on trying to attain an ideal as much as it is to learn how to address, how to enter, how to be mindful of what's actually happening in the moment. And this is a very important distinction between the ideal and the actual. And if you have a choice between one or the other, in Buddhist practice we always choose the actual over the ideal. And the ideal, the actual isn't always so ideal. You know, and that's what makes it so, you know, awkward and difficult. And why many of us would rather not hang out with the actual, because we prefer the ideal. And often we make ideals for ourselves, or we're offered them, and they're often seemingly much more pleasant and attractive than the actual. And in fact, many people come to do Buddhist practice because they have some problems with the actual, the way things actually are, and they're really determined to change that. Maybe it's something, some part of their personality, or some part of their way they relate to the world, which they're not satisfied with. They say, this part of who I am, that's unacceptable, and so I will, you know, try to live differently. It's not acceptable to go around being angry or afraid, so I'm going to try to be a person who's kind or not afraid. People or perhaps it's the situation around them that's not acceptable. The actual situation around them. So I've got to change situation. I have to resist certain things. I have to stand up to certain things. I have to manipulate things and change certain things. And this is all very fine. But the heart of Buddhist practice is, in a sense, to forget about the ideal. Forget about all ideals, including Buddhist ideals. And learn how to, in an uncompromising way, enter into the actual experience of what's happening right now. But there's a particular aspect of the actual which is the heart of the heart. So it isn't necessarily everything we pay attention to, But for Buddhist practice, there's a certain very key component part which is really important. And that is our clinging. The clinging that exists in the present moment, we pay attention to. We bring our attention to bear on the clinging. And clinging is kind of shorthand for Buddhism for the origin of our suffering, for our origin of our sense of dissatisfaction with life, our resistance to certain things, our pushing away is called clinging. Our holding on and grasping to certain things is called clinging. Our fear of the certain things in the abstract is called clinging. And the idea is, in Buddhism, is that the ideal is you can live a life that's free of clinging. But the way to do that is to forget about the ideal and rather to focus on what you're actually doing. And if in the actual moment you're clinging, the heart of practice is to bring our attention to bear on that clinging. To really take it, to really be completely honest about it and enter it and look at it and be with it in 100%. I recently told someone that my practice these days is to concentrate on clinging. As soon as I said it, I realized that it had two meanings. And I didn't mean that I concentrate on clinging better. I bring my attention to bear on my clinging. And the tricky thing is to hold your attention right there with the clinging. And then don't try to manipulate it or change it or push it away or let go of it, but just stay there with it. So I was sitting retreat for the last 3 or 4 days, silent retreat. And I noticed at some point in the actual experience was I felt somewhat uncomfortable. I was suffering. Maybe suffering is a very strong word, but I was suffering. And it seemed familiar to me, the suffering that I had. And I realized that the suffering has arisen periodically for me when I'm engaged in intensive practice, silent retreats. And I also realized that I was familiar with it, but I realized I'd never actually studied it. I never actually looked at it carefully. I knew kind of what it felt like in my body. It felt like a certain kind of tightening, kind of upwelling pressure, kind of yucky pressure somehow in the area where I have my irritation. So I brought my attention to bear on that. I just held it there. And I knew, I saw I had a tendency sometimes to want to get rid of it or push it away or whatever, but I just held it there. And it wasn't so clear. So that was part of the difficulty. It was definitely a physical feeling that was connected to it. But it was kind of an abstract feeling. It had kind of nebulous kind of borders. It was kind of like vague, kind of somewhere in this neck, upper torso area. And so it wasn't like I can just kind of easily, as it was some things, kind of just put my attention there and keep it there. You know, like if I have a sharp pain in my knee, I can just put my attention right there. It's very clear where it is and just stay there with it. Or the breath is often very clear for me and I can just stay there with the breath. But this was kind of awkward to hang out with because it wasn't so clear. So anyway, I said, oh well, this is what's happening. This is the actual. So I'll just hang out there and just keep my attention there. Be there with it. It was very interesting. One of the things I discovered was that part of suffering came from was, and why it kind of reappeared periodically in my practice, was I had this little sense of kind of pushing into the future and kind of waiting for something to happen. Some wonderful things supposed to happen in practice. The little bangs, the big bangs, some nice feeling of calm. Something was supposed to happen, right? And so I was kind of doing this practice, you know, being present, following my breath, doing the things we do. But a little part of me was kind of clinging to some idea of getting something. The ideal, something beyond what was actually happening. And this was causing me suffering. the sense of pressure and tightness. And for the first time, I really looked at it, hung out with it. And there's two things that happen when I did that, or that happens to us when we do this kind of investigation, is in just hanging out there and looking at it, being willing to hang in there. Sometimes I have to be willing to hang in there a long time with our suffering. Just hanging with our suffering, just great, there's my suffering, I'll hang in with it. How many of you think that you're not so eager to hang in with your suffering? You're quick. You want a fix. You want to change it. You want to judge it. You want to get away from it. But just kind of patiently hang in there. No practice is accomplished without some fair degree of patience. So I hung in there and I saw these things. So two things happen, besides whatever insight you might have. One is the very act of bringing attention to bear on our clinging is bringing forth a part of us which is not clinging. Attention itself, very clearly investigating attention, holding our attention there, that itself doesn't cling. So we're bringing part of us, we're like shifting the context, we're shifting our relationship, where before it was maybe primarily just clinging, to now we have a different relationship. Clinging is still there, but now it's like we've awakened part of our mind which is not clinging. We've kind of strengthened a part of our presence, part of our character, part of our personality, part of our being, our presence, which has the capacity to be present for things without clinging to it or resisting it or being afraid of it. Just by being able to hold the attention there, that the holding of attention there that does that. So that's great. That should be enough, isn't it? But also what happens is as you hold it there, is that often our clinging begins to relax. It's very hard for clinging to stay clinging if the light of awareness is held there for a long time, patiently, acceptantly, without judgment or evaluation. If we look at our suffering and are reacting to it, oh my God, why me and not now? It could have been yesterday, or you know, whatever it might be. We kind of react and we get upset, or we argue with it, or you know, we analyze it to death, or whatever we do all this stuff with it. As long as we do that, the clinging itself doesn't feel like it. You know, it has permission to relax. It's under attack. So it just holds on tighter. But there's kind of a way in which if we look and just hold our attention there, and don't try to do anything with it, and have great patience, that miraculously the clinging begins to release itself. And so then it goes away. Maybe, after a while. And then you say, great. But then you say, if you're practicing well, then you say, okay, where's the next clinging? And you, and part of what practice is, the heart of practice is you're kind of like your attention is like a, I don't know what the right analogy is here, but like a mole or a gopher that is it, or the expression is to ferret out, right? Is a ferret an animal? It ferrets things out, right? So you're a ferret. Is ferreting out your clinging. So you start off with maybe the grossest suffering you have, and you hang out there. And sooner or later it softens, maybe even goes away. And then bring your attention to the next grossest, and the next grossest. And slowly with time, you get to the more and more subtle layers of clinging, of suffering that's a part of you. So rather than looking at the ideal, we look at the actual experience of suffering and clinging as is occurring in the present moment. Now, you might say, you know, boy, this is a downer of a practice. I mean, geez, I never heard anything as despairing and depressing as just hanging out with my suffering and, you know, and then finally when it goes away, I'm told, just go find some more. once you get a hang of it, it becomes kind of a delight. It becomes kind of a joy to realize you can bring to bear on your difficulties this kind of luminous, light, clear practice of awareness. And that it really makes a difference. And to have some real personal experience, that you really do this to yourself, you really, really hung in there patiently, acceptingly, with some suffering, really to feel it and be with it. And to see that just doing that transforms it. To know for yourself that's a possibility is really, really important in practice. And if you haven't had that experience yet, then I'd really encourage you, go find some good suffering. and hang in there with it in this way I'm talking about. And see if it happens to you. See if you can find that part. And that gives you tremendous confidence. And that confidence then will hopefully give you some sense of joy or delight or satisfaction in doing this practice of looking for suffering. Now, so non-clinging is one of the great ideals of Buddhist practice. So after doing this for a while, a person can have a sense of what non-clinging feels like, or some idea of it. And this can be a trap. Because what happened to me for some years in my practice was I identified something that I called non-clinging, and then I tried to hold myself to there. it was kind of a clinging. And it took me some while to realize that it actually kind of made my mind kind of brittle or kind of tense, to have this kind of trying to focus on this wonderful, beautiful, pure ideal. So what I did was I don't do that anymore. I just, focus on my clinging. And it makes me much more flexible. And I much prefer to have a flexible mind than a brittle one. And because it really makes the mind be able to kind of flow and move and go into your clinging and see the clinging be released. That allows for the mind to kind of move and flow. But to hold yourself anywhere up against an ideal doesn't let the mind flow or move. So this is a very small, maybe silly example of something. Recently I was carrying the recycling bins back from, I don't have a curb, but back from the main road back to the garage, and it's maybe 200 feet or so, the distance. And these are four big recycling bins. And they're kind of heavy. And to save myself the trouble of going two or three or four times back and forth, I put two of them, one inside the other, and I carry two at a time, one in each arm. And it's kind of heavy. I'm not really that strong, so it's kind of heavy. So I was carrying it. It was long enough, 200 feet or whatever. I was carrying it that it began to hurt in my arm. And with pain comes the normal things like, oh my God, or this is terrible, or I hate this, or, boy, am I a wimp. I should be big, strong guy, and here I am, I've gotten to the age of 46, and I'm not really that strong, and woe is me. And it's easy to burden oneself, right, on a lot of things, right? Very quickly, have you noticed? So, anyway, I noticed that it was hurting. So I just noticed the burdens I was carrying about it, which was a good practice to do. That's what I'm saying you should do. And I let go of them. And that was very nice, to let go of them. And I was just carrying. I was in pain, but there wasn't any problem. I was just carrying these recycling bins. And then it occurred to me. Well, this is nice. It occurred to me. Well, first, for a moment, I congratulated myself. I said, "Oh, this is what I've learned from all my years of Buddhist practice. I've learned how just to, hang out with suffering and not make it a big deal, and just not burden myself with anything. And this is great, So that was burdening myself a little bit, but anyway. So then it occurred to me, well, instead of just, you know, bearing this, what if I just change my intention, what I'm doing here? And rather than just let it be in kind of intention of carrying the recycling bins to the garage, why don't I make it my intention to lift weights and get strong? And so I started lifting these recycling bins back and forth to the Wang Nan driveway. And that worked fine, you know, it was quite nice, and I was doing two things at once, which we like to do, so it was nice too. And so I started wondering after that, you know, about how intention can change situation quite dramatically. So the function of Buddhist practice, this is, I think, a very radical thing I'm going to say, and maybe a discouraging thing to say. The function of Buddhist practice is to help us not to cling. And helping us not to cling is like opening a gate that we can walk through. And the other side of the gate is the whole world that we have to relate to in some way. And Buddhist practice doesn't necessarily say a lot about what you do when you get through that gate. You can find Buddhists who will say things, all kinds of things to you. I mean, advice is cheap, right? But the main function of Buddhist practice is to make sure that gate is always open. Or if it was not open, to help you open it up slowly. So the gate of clinging is open, so there's no clinging. So I went to one of my teachers and said something like this once. I've gotten somewhat good at letting go. So if challenging situations come up for me, I can just let go and kind of find some peace or some equanimity in the midst of it. What's really hard for me is situations where it requires some initiative, where I have to make a decision and do something, act. And for example, being a parent, there's a lot of things I have to do. I can't just sit there and notice my discomfort and let go. And so I pointed this out to the teacher. I was expecting him to give me some wonderful advice about how to do and make decisions and get involved in some easy way. You know, just give me the key and the secret, and then I just live happily ever after. And he refused. He just said, just look at your clinging. Where's your resistance? Where's your attachment? Where's your, you know, your fear? You know, just, you know, look at that. I said, yeah, I can look at that, I can let go of it, but... And I realized relatively quickly that he wasn't going to give me any answers. He was kept pointing me back to the gate. Take really good care of the gate, and you have to figure out for yourself how you're going to live your life. But at least if you take care of the gate, you don't have the burden of your clinging, of your suffering, of your fear, of your ambition in the way of your decision. And then decision making also happens hopefully without any suffering. Maybe not easy to make a decision, not easy to know what to do. Maybe you make mistakes, but you're not adding to this. Adding to the difficulty, the problems arise out of our clinging, our resistance. So the radical thing I wanted to say was Buddhism, the heart of Buddhism, is to help us look at how the gates are closed, and to go back to that gate over and over again, and then decide what to do from there. So the example of the recycling bins is that I knew how to get to zero. I knew how to let go of the burdens I had that I took put on based on the discomfort. And then for some reason I decided to, you know, lift weights. You know, it was a fine choice to make. I could have made other choices. What to do? I'd come back to this point of non-clinging, and then that gave me the opportunity, like, to go in all kinds of different directions, in a free way. Does that make sense? So the disappointing thing is that some of you want a religion that will tell you what to do, and Buddhism doesn't come to tell you what to do. This is going to tell you, except to tell you, keep looking at the gate. Keep looking at your clinging. Hopefully, learn how to do it so you really enjoy it. So it's a joyful thing to do. And it can be very joyful. I was delighted sitting there looking. I was so delighted sitting there in the retreat the other day looking at the suffering. I said, wow. Part of the delight was, wow, I've had this for a long time. And I just let it exist kind of in the back. Now that I'm looking at it seriously, I realize I was always familiar with it. It was always there. But I just never kind of turned towards it to look at it. So now I'm looking at it. Great. I was actually kind of happy. So, wow, this is really something. After all these years, you think I should have known by now. I'm kind of slow, but here it is. I'm doing it now. This is what's happening actually. So we choose the actual instead of the ideal. Let the ideal take care of itself. Another way of saying this is that if we are inspired by an ideal, one of the ways to practice is to really attend to all the things that make it difficult for us to follow through on the ideal or live by the ideal. So rather than making ourselves into the ideal, we look at what keeps us from the ideal. And part of the idea in Buddhism is that some of the ideal qualities that come from spiritual practice are innate in who we are. So if we just learn how to get out of the way, these things will shine forth. This is one of the reasons why non-clinging is such a powerful experience. It allows what's innate to come forth. Actually, I wanted to modify some things that earlier. The teacher I went to, hoping to get some wonderful answer about how to make decisions and take initiative, and he kept pointing me back to just look at your clinging. If there's clinging there, look at that. He wasn't going to add anything more. He did add something else, actually. He said, also look at your intention. And he in particular was concerned with my intention. Or the intention to be helpful to others. So those two, that was also supposed to be a guide. So, you know, we have to still make decisions what to do. So he gave me a little bit of guide. He didn't just say, you know, it's up to you completely. He said, it's up to you, but look at your intentions. And maybe if you have some deep personal intentions that are meaningful for you, they can help you with those decisions. So it's not easy to hang out with clinging. But one of the ways that makes it easier is to learn how to identify the manifestation of clinging in our body. A lot of our clinging, the way we hold on to things, manifests itself in our bodies. Tension or tightness or pressure or resistance somewhere. And if you can learn how to find the bodily manifestation and just place yourself right there and look at it right in that place, that makes it a lot easier than just doing it in the abstract. Should I stop, or should I give you another example of how this works?
Another example.
Okay, it's up to me. I have to make the decision. I'll make a quick one. Well, I don't know if this is kind of... I came back from this retreat yesterday, and sometimes after these little retreats, there was a lot of concentration, and I was somehow energized, and I couldn't go to sleep last night. So, I was up to about 3:30, and then I slept for about 3 hours. And so I was laying there. Maybe some of you had the experience of laying there middle of the night, not being able to sleep. And then this was the practice that I did, was the practice of looking at my clinging. Because I saw that I was suffering a little bit about the suffering had to do about clinging to some idea about how I was going to be the next day. I'm not going to be able to function. I'm not going to be able to take care of things. You know, I'll be tired. I'll be, you know, things will be hard, whatever. And in the if I just looked around the room and said, like, you know, everything's fine right now. There's absolutely no problem right now. I'm comfortable. Except for this concern about tomorrow, I'm comfortable, at peace. You know, it's actually quite nice here. So I just looked at that suffering and that clinging and expectation and fear of what was going to happen. And by looking at it carefully, I could let go of it. And I also reminded myself, oh, tomorrow, maybe I will be tired. Well, I'll just look at my clinging then. Because maybe then in the middle of being tired, I'll be worried about I'm not functioning very well. I'm not giving a good Dharma talk. Well, I know how to take care of that. I don't have to worry about the future. I'll just take care of that when it comes. I'll look at my clinging. When I'm in an uncomfortable situation of being tired, I'll look at my clinging at that moment. So I don't know if that was a helpful example or not, but it was very, very recent. So, yes.
I've only recently started to meditate regularly. I've been trying more and more just to get to a place of concentration on breathing or counting or something without any further thoughts. What you're talking about in terms of non-clinging, is that something you intend that we should incorporate into this sort of thoughtless meditation, or is it something you're recommending is just part of living the day?
I think certainly both are useful. And in the ultimate Buddhist sense, the practices of following the breath and calming the mind, getting concentrated, so that we can prepare ourselves to do this work of looking at clinging. So we can look at clinging with a very stable and concentrated mind. Because it's actually quite easy. It's very hard for a distracted mind to stay present for our clinging. We'll look at it for a moment and we'll flit off and think of all kinds of other things. So it's a good idea to develop some concentration, some calm. But sooner or later, you need to kind of incorporate, use that ability of the mind to be quite still and concentrated, to look at the suffering itself. Yeah?
Does that mean you're looking at more than the sensations? For example, if it's, say, anger and a feeling, sensation around
it. Why am I feeling that?
Is there a level of analysis that goes on as well as just experience?
There can be some. I mean, if it's pretty rudimentary analysis, it's fine. If it gets elaborately involved in story and your biography, then it may be useful to do that, but it's not something we do as part of the formal practice itself. You might notice, for example, that if you really hang out there with anger for a while and just feel the anger and be with it, feel it in the body, you might notice after a while the reason you're angry is that you're self-righteously holding on to some idea that you're right and everyone else is wrong. And so that's what the clinging is, in that holding on to the self-righteousness. So then you learn to let go of the anger, which is a kind of clinging in itself, and look at what's really operating underneath that, and look at that more carefully. So that might be a little bit of analysis, but it's pretty... Mostly we kind of let things speak to us rather than us trying to figure it out. It's kind of like feeling our way. It's like a feeling practice. We feel our way into suffering. We feel our way into clinging. Feel our way through it.
Do you consciously try and let go of the anger once you've found the root of it? Or is it something... I mean,
I do both. It's very useful to have a real solid experience foundation in knowing how to look at something clinging and not let go of it, but let it let go of itself, and not us always be the agent in charge of making something happen. So so it's very important training is just to be there and letting go happen. So our practice is letting be practice, just let things be with careful attention. And then with letting things be, things will move. Pesha.
I'm thinking, what's the difference between a goal that I have that I really want to achieve and clinging? Is it, I can have the goal and if I don't feel upset, I'm not clinging?
I think the best measure for the difference is if you're suffering or not.
Yeah.
And what happens is the mind gets quieter and stiller. We start noticing more and more subtle layers of suffering or clinging. So a goal which seemed quite innocent when the mind is quite coarse and distracted, when you actually can look very, very carefully, see actually that goal too had a little bit of clinging involved in it. But yeah, that's a difference. I mean, it's fine to have goals. You know, please, it's important to have goals.
I think you just touched on my question. Is clinging always the negative thing, or you this sense of joy or satisfaction that you feel in your practice, that's not clinging?
No. No, no.
Clinging has to do with a negative sensation.
Well, I could cling to the joy.
That's
a problem too.
Bad.
Sure. All clinging. If you pay careful enough attention, all clinging feels off. It's not always so obvious. Partly because if we're clinging to something really enjoyable, we might not notice. We might know 90% of the experience is the enjoyable stuff. We don't notice in the great brilliant light of the enjoyment. We don't notice a 10% behind the scene that's holding on for dear life. But if you could really pay attention, you'd see actually this too is unsatisfactory or not so pleasant. So all... yes?
I'm curious about your experience. I love that example of sleepless night. And certainly when I experience that, will start ruminating about, oh, I'm going to be flat tomorrow, I don't get to sleep. And I'm wondering, when you caught that and let it go, and then just continued watching what was going on in terms of clinging, was that whole experience restful enough so that then the next morning, the next day, when you had to function, you functioned better than you expected?
You're trying to find out whether there's a good payment. You're trying to wonder some guarantee that
you have a wonderful insomniac tool there.
If I do what you're saying, then you know, am I going to feel better because of it? You certainly feel better in the moment.
Yeah. Well, how do you actually personally feel today? It's a very coherent question.
Yeah, I feel pretty good. I got really tired around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, really sleepy. And I went to lay down, take a nap, and laid really still for a while, and I don't think I fell asleep. A little bit of suffering, I'm not falling asleep, came up, you know, oh my God, you know. Not again. I'm not getting my beauty sleep. But that was only for a little brief moment there. But, you know, it seemed okay. I kind of figured you guys would be forgiving. Yes?
Anecdotal evidence on this. On long airplane flights, I find it very hard to sleep. But if I do meditate, I'm much more rested afterwards.
Yeah, definitely.
So I have a question of how clinging manifests in your body and how noticing it and just staying with it. You sort of alluded to this, and I wasn't sure I was following what you were saying. So if one notices a certain pain in their body or contraction or whatever, are you suggesting to try to penetrate the pain and you'll discover the clinging within that? Or
yeah.
Is the pain the result of the clinging?
The word pain doesn't automatically imply clinging. There can be pain without clinging. So then there's no problem. Then you try to figure out what the best thing to do is. You know, if you are damaging yourself, then do something sensible with the pain. But if it's not damaging, you know, then maybe, you know, there's no problem then if you're, there's no clinging. And then if you want, if the pain is the predominant experience, physical pain, that can be the focus of your concentration for mindfulness. But you're not doing it for any particular purpose to get rid of it. That's where you're developing your mindfulness. Does it respond well enough? Or?
So if pain was the result of clinging, how would you determine the difference between a pain that's just a pain and a pain that's the result of clinging? I sort of think that I would know quickly, but I'm not sure. If you're talking about something more subtle, then I'm missing it.
No, we don't always know automatically. It's not that quick. Sometimes you have to hang out with the pain for a long time. Sometimes a really long time to see where the clinging is. Sometimes it's pretty quick. If it's in meditation and you feel strong physical pain and you're not sure if it's physical or structural or, you know, comes from your clinging, when you get up from your sitting, if it persists, then it might be something structural, something you need to attend to more seriously in terms of making some physical change. But if you get up from your sitting, it's gone. And it's probably not something structural. It's probably something it's okay to hang out with longer. And you hang out with longer until it becomes clear. And it becomes clear either way, maybe. Anyway, it's not so, you know, black and white. I mean, you know, my friend, a Zen priest who had knee pain, and he would get angry at his knees for giving him pain. So he would sit there and he would push into his knee to kind of, you know, get back at it. And so eventually I think he needed knee surgery. Pretty dumb thing to do. But, you know, so he was, you know, augmenting the pain. And, you know, physically, by doing something physical and causing more physical damage. But the genesis of that damage, I would say, had to do with his resistance, his anger, and hostility towards the pain. And it might not be so obvious immediately for him that if he focuses on the physical pain itself, you know, that there's this hostility that's part of this, part of the complex. So that's the example where the hostility, the clinging that shows itself as hostility, is the genesis of the physical damage, damaging pain. So it can go in all directions. And so there's no, you know, right answer, just except you have to do an investigation yourself. Last one, then we'll stop.
I just want to say, I get really surprised quite often when I realize that the basis of my suffering is clinging, because it's so subtle often. You know, I know you're such a experienced meditator that it probably comes clear more quickly. But I'm always surprised at how subtle it is.
Mm.
Well, yeah, because sometimes I don't even know I'm suffering. Yeah, it is subtle.
So the bad news, of course, is that Buddhism helps you understand your suffering. I didn't know I was still suffering this much. My God. But it's a lot better to be awake and aware than to continue being numb. And then hopefully you discover the joy of the engagement, looking at this, and then the wonderful joy of freedom that comes as our clinging starts to get released. The ultimate ideal in Buddhism is release of all clinging. But don't be attached to that. So thank you all very much.